It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Hey, everybody. What's going on this week?
I am just happy to be here.
You're having a few house problems there. Is that right, Josh?
Well, currently, we did notice Noah taking the deer and the dogs and the cats, putting them on this big boat that showed up out of nowhere. I think they're predicting for our area anywhere from 4 to 8 inches of rain, and today's the first of the 4 days, and we've only got 2 leaks in the living room, so we got that going for us so far.
Winter in Mississippi. What about you, Jim? You're getting a house, aren't you? You're gearing up for a big purchase.
We're trying to. We did the home inspection today. We're expecting an appraisal by the end of the week, so then we'll decide if we option in or out once we have both of those figured out. So we found us a nice little spot close by where we are now, so I'm looking forward to it. About twice as big as where I'm at now, so.
Yeah, the pictures send us look great. It's going to be pretty cool for you. So let's talk about AirPods Pro. So Josh, you and I were having a sort of a conversation this morning. So tell us your thoughts on the AirPods Pro and why they're a big hit in your house.
Well, my wife's a school teacher, and she, of course, when she's got downtime, she likes to listen to her podcast or music when she's in the classroom, and got her a pair of AirPods a couple months after they first came out. And with the Pros, it was something that she was, oh, well, you know, yeah, I might like it, and it should sound better, and the noise canceling, but there's so much money. Well, me and my son went for a trip in Birmingham this past weekend, and I snuck her a pair at the Apple store, and in and out in 60 seconds. It was wonderful. Great experience. Got them to her, and she was setting them up last night. And, of course, oh, you shouldn't have. It's too much money. And she gets them put in. And the thing that I did like was the new stuff, of course, is the noise canceling and the transparency mode. They did a beautiful job of baking it straight into Control Center. Hold down on the volume deal where it shows the AirPod Pro's icon, and lo and behold, there's your quick turn on for noise canceling and transparency. She did the noise canceling and was like, oh, wow, I can't hear you at all. That's awesome. I said, now try the transparency. And she said, I can hear my music, but I can carry on a conversation with you. I can hear the cats under the bed. I can hear everything, but I still hear my music. And she was it went from, yeah, they're nice, but I should take them back, to why didn't I know about these and why didn't I buy these when they first came out? And it was one thing that you said too, Brian. You know, you said you and Jason, I think, have got a set of the Sonys with 26 letters in them. Jim, my apologies. So both of y'all do. You know, that it has the transparency style mode where you can hear your surroundings, but that it to hear y'all talk, it wasn't as well-baked as Apple's solution, and it wasn't near as turnkey and didn't work as well.
Well, it works the way it's supposed to. It's just not an always-on kind of thing. Basically, you hold up your right hand next to the ear cuff, and it turns it on. So it's kind of like if you're somewhere and somebody starts talking to you, it mutes down your music and then turns the speaker on to the outside world.
Microphone.
So there's not a mode where it's, yeah, the microphone out to the outside world at that point. So it's not an always-on kind of thing. I mean, it's very cool. I've used them at work before like that, but just having the AirPods Pro and transparency now when I'm in the office is really great, because like you said, it's, you know, you can have somebody walk up behind you and start talking, and you know, you know they're there, and you can turn around and hear them. Whereas with, you know, if you have the Sonys on, you kind of have to see that, hey, I need to turn that microphone on, you know, with my hand motion to make that happen.
But I think that with the transparency deal, it's in my opinion, it's classic Apple. Apple is very, very rarely the first company to come out with a feature, but they're the first company to not only do it right, but do it right and present it in a way to the consumer that makes them think, man, where has this been my entire life? And 6 months later, every other competitor in the market is putting the same thing into all of their products. You know, kind of like you said with the Sony, it works, but it's kind of a little different. And the way Apple does it seems like it's just, you know, like you said earlier, Brian, everybody that does these smart headphone type deals is going to copy this feature in the next 6 to 12 months. And as well, they should.
I mean, I kind of see it as a necessary evil with, or not evil, but a necessary functionality with the AirPods Pro, because you've got the in-ear buds, whereas with the original AirPods, you could hear your surroundings because they didn't seal. But with the AirPods Pro, because you've got that thing shoved down your, you know, your ear canal to seal out the outside world, you know, I think they almost had to come up with something. But then what they did come up with is very cool. I've walked around with just transparency mode on, and nothing playing at all, just because, you know, I can hear the hear things so much better, you know, in that case. It's almost like a hearing aid, really.
Really? I would not have thought so. It actually helps with that stuff too. Maybe I need to do that. Get the cheap miracle ear going on.
I've done the similar before, where I'll go in and put it in transparency mode and maybe not have anything going or just something that's very low. And I do find that it helps me hear my surroundings a little bit better, almost like a hearing aid. So that is a good point. But one of the things that we were talking about is that your first generation AirPods don't really last very long anymore. And you had some trepidation going forward about the future of being able to buy these AirPods, knowing that it costs $50 an ear to get the batteries replaced or serviced or whatever it is Apple does, because it's not very clear, you know. So there's a cost there of keeping this and using this for an extended period of time. Want to talk about that?
Do I ever? I think the biggest issue I have with it is I understand that these devices they're more or less disposable. And it's $169 retail price tag for a disposable item is a lot. It's a lot to swallow. You look at the rest of Apple's devices as far as battery life, and I get it. Lithium ion technology is what it is. It's only going to have a few hundred cycles at most, and then the batteries are just not going to maintain their integrity. It is what it is. It's the best solution we currently have. The difference is that traditionally on all other Apple products, the laptops, you're looking at $1,000 plus, and even on the non-serviceable MacBook Airs or something to that, you can go to Apple or a third party and for, let's say, 10 to 15% of the cost of the item, have your batteries replaced with brand new ones. iPhones, even when the iPhones were in the $650 to $700 range, it was about $100 either through Apple or through a third party to get your battery replaced. Again, quick napkin math, 15 to 20% of the cost of the product. It stinks, but after 2 years, sure, it's not that bad. $169 set of AirPods, if both of mine die, I think I know when I started this podcast, my AirPods were 90 and 92%. They'd been in the case for days. And hopefully they'll last through this podcast, you know, get an hour, hour and a half out of them. I paid $169 for them. It's going to cost $100 to replace to not even replace the batteries, to get new batteries or refurbished batteries in these. That's about 2/3 of the cost of the product, and that's ridiculous. I know now that their AirPods are in the world enough that you can get them for under retail. Places will put them on sale, be it Best Buy or our good friends at Target or even Walmart. You know, if you find them on sale for $145, $150, yeah, you can bring it down, but for another $30 or $40, you get brand new, full warranty products. Why would you not do that?
The ones you buy from a third party like Walmart or Target or Amazon, they're still covered under Apple Care, right? They're still, you know, you have your year warranty, and you can add Apple Care to it after the fact. So Apple's not one of those retailers that if you don't buy it from them, they don't treat it the same way. It's still honored just as if you had bought it at the Apple Store.
Oh, absolutely. They don't care which one of their retailers you buy it from, as long as you get it brand new and you've got your receipt and it's the first activation for it, which is fine. The AirPod Pros, strangely enough, if I believe what you showed me in their reference document is even the AirPod Pros are $50 an ear to replace them. Is that right?
Yes, that's how I understand it. All models of AirPods, it's the same cost. So with something that's exponentially more expensive than the standard generation AirPods, you could argue that it's, you know, a better deal if you want to look at it that way.
Right. I mean, doing the napkin math, it's 40% replacement cost to get the batteries replaced or refurbished. And from what I've read on this, it's one of those that it's designed in such a manner that not even Apple themselves can really replace the battery in them. From what I've understand, if you send it in for a battery upgrade or replacement, they basically ship you a set of refurbished AirPods, which I don't really know how they would refurbish it to begin with if they can't replace the battery. But, you know, from what everybody said, you can't even, it is an irreplaceable part that pretty much Apple just recycles the AirPods and ships out a fresh set. And there you go.
And to me, I mean, for $50 an AirPod, that sounds like a pretty good deal. If you've got a couple of used AirPods and they're going to send you out a whole new set for $50 a pop, if you're willing to just kind of keep swapping them in. I had the same issues with my AirPods. They were How old were they, Brian, when the Pros came out, when we finally replaced them? Like over 2 years, right?
I mean, yeah. If you got yours, right after. I got mine in the very first batch that came out, which was December of 2016. I think you had yours by February, maybe.
Yeah.
Because you paid a premium off eBay, if I remember. Yeah. Craigslist.
Yeah, well,
I did
the Craigslist. Yeah. Yeah. And then I had ordered a set. And so when those came in, yeah, I sold those. By the time, so it was, you know, 2 years plus it went by, I couldn't use my AirPods for work a lot of times because I couldn't do an hour conference call with them because I had used them so much over those 2 years that for just playing music, I could get a, you know, a couple of hours out of them, but playing music and using the microphone, it chewed through the battery. I mean, you know, 30 minutes top. And I could have, like we've talked here, sent them off. And I was just keep waiting because they kept saying new ones are coming. And so when the Pros finally came out, you know, I jumped at them and I like the Pros. I don't think I've had as good an experience as some have because I have had some problems with getting them to seal in my ears. I mean, they don't seal great, but the way I look at it is I could have returned them, but then I would have ended up going straight out and buying a pair of regular AirPods or getting mine, you know, getting swapped in for the refurbs. But I just kept them because I did like the functionality of the transparency and the things like that. So, I mean, if I had just bought a pair of AirPods and switched, I might have been willing to just stick with the AirPods instead of going Pro. But mine had gotten 2 years of good use out of them. I mean, I think we've said it many times on this podcast, but it's the best thing Apple's come out with in a couple of years. I mean, it's like, you know, these things are the bomb.
Oh, well, I'll definitely agree with that. You know, like I said, I'm wearing them right now. My wife got me a set right after I got her a set, and it is hands down one of the best products they've released in ages. It's just that, you know, again, kind of like I say, I'm cheap. I look at all these other products, you know, even the Apple Watch, which the battery life on first gen Series Zero Apple Watches were abysmal for most people. And it wasn't great for me, but it held up. I got a good solid 2 years out of it. And even then, when the battery life started, you know, it started deteriorating. And you know, whereas at bedtime, I might have, you know, 30% at the end of the day, it would start to get 20% or 10%. Or even some days, if I got a lot of notifications, it might die on me before I made it out of work. But still, I was able to get most day use out of it. When these AirPods kind of start losing their battery life, you go from 5 hours of music to, like you said, an hour or two of music, maybe a 30 to 45 minute conference call with microphone, and that's about all you get out of them. It's not really usable at that point.
To talk about how many they're selling, I'm actually kind of surprised you were able to walk into an Apple store and walk out with a pair, because I thought they were on back order.
Well, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, it was also, and actually that was how we got her first set of AirPods, was I had ordered her a set. On the website, and it said, oh, you know, yeah, 8 weeks to ship. Okay, fine, whatever. And we were in Birmingham for a doctor's appointment, and I just managed to whip out the Apple Store app and go, oh, they're in stock. Let me call them. Yes, sir, we just got a shipment in today. Great, I'm on my way. I'll be there in 20 minutes. And we just kind of slid right in and got that.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Ah. Something that's important to remember, too, and I think we talked about this in the chat, is that Apple does have a couple of advantages and a couple of tricks up their sleeves where they can extend the life of these products. So the proprietary chip that they put in each generation of the AirPods, I'm sure that there's somebody, given how, you know, it's been rumored that this generated, what, $6 billion in sales for Apple, which is amazing to me that just earphones or earbuds can do that, especially since the big thought was, well, no one will pay premium when there's perfectly good, you know, earpods in the iPhone case, but clearly that's wrong. But they do have the ability to work on efficiency, power efficiency from that side, because they do have their own proprietary chip. The new models, starting at version 2 and greater, are using Bluetooth, I guess 5.0, the low energy. So at least they're squeezing every bit of life that they can, and with each successive generation, since they are very good with designing their own chips, I don't expect that it'll get worse. In fact, you know, we were talking about that maybe we're victims of the first generation, because my first generations from 2016 are the same way. I tried to watch an episode of Watchmen, you know, paired to my Apple TV, and before it even made it to the end of the episode, I was getting that bloop bloop. You know, it was starting to die, which was very, very frustrating. So, you know, there may be things as subsequent generations go forward, it may be better. Unfortunately, they are kind of disposable, as you said, because there's no one's going to buy some used AirPods off of eBay or Craigslist. If you do, that's pretty gross. I don't know what's wrong with you. I try to keep my ears clean, but I wouldn't let anyone borrow mine, for God's sakes. Like, no, that's just, it's going into a hole in right. your body.
This is the kind of thing where you don't even say, hey, try these. You know, just, nope.
That would be curb your enthusiasm episode. Oh, I'm good, you know? No, I think I'll pass, you know?
Well, that was with Hope's AirPod Pros last night. She was like, here, you should try them out and hear they sound. No, honey, your ears are different, you know, and it's not even that. It's just, no, those are yours. I want you to get them configured for your ears. And when you get them right, I don't want to get them messed up for mine.
If ever there was a case that, you know, repairability is compromised by design decisions, this is the pinnacle of that, because to get that trade-off of something that's so small and so ubiquitous, you have to also then give up the notion that even Apple themselves could possibly repair it. Like, it would be a game of Operation or something. You know what I mean? Tweezers and some jeweler's loop. Like, it would be, you know, it would be a near impossibility.
I mean, imagine how big the battery is in there. I mean, it can't be that big. I mean, last night, when I went to bed, I wear mine to bed a lot and just fall asleep in them and wake up in the middle of the night and just kind of find them in the bed. And I got in the bed and my right ear was 100% and my left ear was 0. So ever how I'd put them back in the case, it just didn't, you know, charge that one. And so I literally just put them both back in the case for like 15 minutes and pulled them back out. And sure enough, that one was up to like, you know, 65-70%, and, you know, plenty enough time for me to fall asleep with them in my ear, you know, like it was nothing. So there ain't a whole lot of battery there.
It is massively disappointing, too, when you go to use them, and they have magnets in them that hold them in place. You can't put them in wrong. You do. Somehow do it, though. I do it, especially with the first gen. I haven't seen it happen with the pros. You go to use them, and one of them's dead. Like, it is the...
I think that's the first time it's happened to me on the pros. You're right with the original ones. You know, it was, you know, basically, like, try to blow out the thing, or, you know, get a Q-tip and clean out up in there a little bit, and, you know, you might get something, a little piece of earwax or something like we were talking, you know, I mean, it happens, you know, and so, yeah, you got to keep your case clean.
Some sort of indicator when that happened would be great when you're putting those things in. That's something the next generation needs to work on.
Yeah, like a fast blink, like, hey, we know this is here, but it's not charging, something like that.
I do like the thing about the pros. If you place the case on an inductive charger, it will turn green to let you know that it's charging. The second generation AirPods will do it too, but you have to press it or something before it will, I think that's right.
That was a very nice feature I noticed last night. Have the Samsung Qi chargers that you recommended, Brian, that got on the nightstand and said, oh, here, honey, check this out. And put it just like, oh, it'll inductive charge. That's awesome. That was a neat little perk feature that it had too. And like you said, you know, kind of like I jokingly said in the chat earlier, I blame Johnny Ive for all this. It's all his fault. It's very much one of those where the design, it has won out, and it should have. You know, if these AirPods were any bigger or any heavier, they would not be near as comfortable. They would not fit near as well, and you would have them falling out. I do remember when I first got them and was showing off to some of my friends, some of my Android friends, they were kind of like, oh, you know, yeah, you'll lose them and fall out of your ear. And showed them, you know, doing jumping jacks and whipping my head around in my living room on a very silly video I sent them. And I said, look, it's not going anywhere. Which was weird for me because the ear pods always fell out of my ears after 10 to 15 minutes use. It was just something they didn't sit in there very tight. And because of the cord dangling down, if the cord got hung on anything, it was pulling right out of my ear. And the fit of the AirPods is actually a reason I'm loath to go to the pros and try them, for the same reason Jim said. You know, Jim doesn't have a perfect fit with it. And my wife, the AirPods never really perfectly fit for her. I have not had the first issue with these things working or fitting, falling out of my ears, being uncomfortable. I could wear these all day and have zero issues out of them. If I pay $160 for a set of headphones, an item that traditionally for the common consumer is $20 to $30 a set, and you go to $160 and pay a premium price for it, it just feels like you should get more than 2 years use out of it. But that just may just be old man get off my lawn grumbling for all it is.
I'm going to vote for the old man get off my lawn.
It probably is. I can third that. But the two things that I think we mentioned this morning was, we talk about how great some of the competition is. Like the Sonys that Jim and I own are absolutely fantastic headphones, right? 20 hours of battery life. You know, you can, I think it's nearly that even with the noise canceling. Like it's still a ridiculous amount of time. You have an app where you can tweak all of these settings on the headphones. It's wonderful.
The sound is amazing. The first time I put those on my head, I was just like, wow. But it's a huge set of headphones. I mean, the only place I use those now is on the plane. I still use those on the plane because to me, they're just better on the plane as far as the noise canceling and whatnot. But I mean, that's it. I've got a $300 pair of headphones that I only use when I fly.
No, I concur with that. The difference is that the headphones are never with you. My AirPods Pro are always in the change pocket of my jeans. I use my AirPods every single day, which I can't say that about any other listening device that I've ever had. So when I'm around the house, I use my second generation AirPods that are usually in my ears most of the time, just in case I get a phone call, if I'm playing, you know, on the Oculus Quest or something, and I get, you know, I was doing that just a little while ago before we recorded. My mother sends me a text message. I'm playing the game and, you know, it automatically reads out my text to me. So, you know, that is something too that's possible because, you know, well, I guess you could do that with any Bluetooth headset now with Siri, I think. But I know specifically with the AirPods, they're unobtrusive. They're in there. The battery lasts all. If I'm not actively listening to music or I'm listening to the occasional podcast, just being able to get a phone call and, you know, say the words, you know, hey, dingus, answer the phone, and it does it, or hey, dingus, send a text message, and it does it. I don't even have to be near my HomePod to have any of that work. So
that still kind of weirds me out a little bit. It's like Megan said, I'm on my way home. Like when it just starts reading out your text messages. I don't know. I mean, it's a cool feature. It still just weirds me out a little bit.
It is kind of strange. I'm glad they play the little tone before they just start talking to you, because otherwise that would be sort of disconcerting. And it is a nice soothing voice, and it's not like Gilbert Gottfried in your ears or something with, hey, you know, you got a text message from your mother and she said, thanks for the gift.
That'd be pretty cool, though. Or, you know, if you get Samuel L. Jackson like you could for Amazon's device.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. I want these.
I would pay extra for that.
Mother scratching texts off my mother scratching phone. I think we've beat that horse to death. So let's see. So back in the fall, I got some NFC tags, some very cheap NFC tags off Amazon. I will put the link in the show note. They're on a long strip of paper, and I didn't really do anything with them for a couple of months. Well, iOS 13 introduced the concept of personal automations, where you can go out and you're supposed to be able to, one of the things I like to do is I walk my dog and I'll start an outdoor walk. For those of you, both of you, I believe, who follow me with our fitness on the Apple Watch. And I wanted the outdoor walk to trigger the automatic closing of my garage door. Now, if I'm in another city or, you know, somewhere else and I do that, who cares if I send a, you know, close the garage statement when it's already closed, right? That command can be run multiple times. Doesn't matter. It never works, right? It'll say running your automation and does absolutely nothing. So while I wait for Apple to hopefully someday fix this, I took one of my NFC tags and I put it on the outside of my house and I programmed it using the iPhone so that when I'm leaving to walk my dog, if I have my phone with me, I just tap my phone to the garage door opener and it automatically, and I'm talking about the controls on the outside, and it will automatically start closing the door. It is the simplest thing, but also the neatest thing. Now, of course, I have to take my phone with me because the whole point was I like to leave my phone in the house. You know, I can take calls, texts, music, podcasts on the watch, so I shouldn't have to, but nice little stopgap. So the NFC tags are like 30-something cents a piece or something. They're really not expensive. They are super cheap. And once you get started doing it, you're going to find all sorts of, like you can stick them in unobtrusive places. Like you could go and like, you know, put your phone underneath the table and it turns on the lights in the kitchen or, you know, starts a playlist playing. That would be the, you know, Jim used to be into those Amazon dash buttons a long time ago. You could build your own Amazon dash button style. Same sort of thing. I'm going to go nuts with these. I can already tell.
I bought some, and I haven't done a whole lot with them because I've just been busy with work, but hopefully here soon, maybe in the new place, I'll start putting some stickers around on stuff.
I am really intrigued by it. The whole thing is just nerdy as all get out, and I love the idea. I just can't think of a single automation I would use for with the NFC tags in my current house, but I'll probably find your link and get a few for myself just to play with.
One of the things that you could do that I just use Siri to do this, so I don't really need the tag, but if you wanted to find a use case, I know in my own house, sometimes my wife and I will go out and we'll come back and, you know, maybe it'll be after midnight. And in my house, when, you know, 11:59 rolls around, all of the lights turn off, all of the doors lock, the air conditioner comes on, the fan comes on, like it does its nightly routine. Well, if I come back and the entire house is dark, well, normally I just invoke Siri from the car and say, hey, you know, whatever, early evening routine or something, and it'll start turning on all the lights and getting things ready. Theoretically, you could walk up to some sticker that you have on the outside of your house or in your garage or whatever, touch your phone to it, and it does the same thing. Something you could do, I have most of my locks replaced with the the HomeKit-enabled locks where you go and you can use Siri to unlock your front door, same sort of thing. You could put a sticker near your door where you touch your phone to the sticker and it automatically unlocks your front door if you wanted to. If you wanted to mimic that convention of, you know, I'm putting a key in a slot to go ahead and unlock the door. Kind of unnecessary at times, but, you know, I'm still trying to work through all of the possible things that I could do with it, because it is anything you can do with Siri, you can trigger from an NFC tag. So theoretically, you could just, you know, speak into the ether and have that happen. But it is kind of nice to be able to tap something. I'll give you a use case for that. Going back to the one where I close the garage when I'm walking the dog. Oftentimes when I'm walking the dog, I'll have a podcast going or I have a playlist going. I don't want to stop what I'm listening to, tell it to do its thing of close the garage, wait for it to respond. And then it, you know, it gives you a paragraph saying, you know, I've done this. You may want to wait a few moments to check the status of your garage instead of just saying I'm closing it and then going back into the music or a podcast. You know, I know it sounds silly. It's like a momentary interruption, but, you know, by touching that, I can avoid it altogether. Sometimes you just don't want Siri to talk back to you.
I have been using the handoff with HomePod a lot lately, where you just like walk in and wave my phone over the HomePod and have it switch on, like if a podcast is playing or if music was playing somewhere else. That's very handy.
With a newly released version of Overcast that came out, it works remarkably well. So I've done this in the past with the old version of Overcast, and it worked, but it would be like you'd have to hold it there, you'd tap it there, and it would eventually work after a couple of tries. The last few times I've used this with a new version of Overcast, I just barely touch it to the HomePod, and it's instantaneous.
Yeah, it's real quick. Yeah, it's really nice. I listen to Up First every morning, and I'll generally start playing it on my phone, like if I'm brushing my teeth or whatever, making coffee. And then when I walk into the office, I just wave my hand over the HomePod and it kind of switches over to there and just keeps playing.
That is some futuristic business. I love that. Josh, you were going to say something.
I'll just, you're all reminding me, I don't use my HomePod nearly enough. I may have to take it back to work and get it out of the living room. Most of my music choices, I'm the only one that likes it in the whole house. So I start playing my music. Oh, would you turn that off? We don't want to listen to that.
Well, my wife is the same way, so I have to listen to music that she likes, or otherwise I think she gets annoyed, so I'm right there with you. But being able to just yell, is it raining outside? Or, you know, what appointments do I have tomorrow morning? Or, you know, little things like that where you can just sort of get it to do dumb stuff that you want it to do is truly nifty.
Yeah, I want another one now for the new place. Like, I'd really like to get us off Amazon devices and basically just have a HomePod upstairs. And we generally need two downstairs because I love having one in my office so much, because it's where I play all my, it's what I use for my office speaker now to play all my music in my office. But we'd need one in the, you know, living room / kitchen too. But it's the kind of thing that grows on you. And now that I have a pie hole and I see how chatty all these Amazon devices are. So I got a Fire Stick 4K to play around with. I actually block that device when I'm not using it, because it talks to, or tries to talk to Amazon so much that I literally just block it from the network when I'm not using it. And when I want to use it, I just go into Unify and let it connect back to the network. Because, I mean, thousands of attempts every 18 to 22 seconds. Hey, I'm here. Hey, I'm here. You know, I'm like, gee, wow. You know, it was ridiculous. So
I blocked my Oculus Quest just this afternoon. I went in and it's not easy to go. You have to, instead of having it automatically join the network, you have to give it a static IP to even get the option. And my stupid network setup, and if Jason were here, he could back me up. You have to let the AT&T fiber modem do your DHCP for the network. Like, it doesn't give you an option to disable it. You're given two networks to choose from, a 192 or a 172, but there's no option in there to go and change what the DNS server is passed for. It's kind of a pain. So I have to use that. Now, the way that I get around that is, for most devices, you can go in and manually on most devices just specify what your DNS server is. So it's not really an option. On a Mac, you can go in and say DHCP, but with a static IP, and you can go in and so it'll request the same thing. So it's still using DHCP, but you can pass certain parameters. Oculus is, and it's Android based, so there you go. But only thing that I've had a problem with, where I had to go and do something where I'm going to have to give it a static IP, just because it's owned by Facebook. Do I really trust that it's not going to be doing that? No, of course not.
No.
So yeah, by putting that in there, I think I'll be okay. I did my smart TV the same way the other day. I went in and was like, you know, why have I never done this? and went in and, you know, just sort of made that the DNS server at the root level.
I've turned those off as well. The TV and the sound bar were so chatty so much. I just said, there are no more updates coming, or I don't really care about updates at this point. So, you know, maybe every now and then I'll turn them back on and let it check. But I'm just, if I look at that pile and I see them all those, even though I know it's not getting anywhere, it's actually blocking it. I'm just like, I don't even want it attempting to do that. So I'm just like, off.
There's no reason for it to. There's nothing in your benefit that's going to do it.
Correct.
When I look at my television, right? No, if you go to Walmart and you buy a Vizio or you buy a TCL, you buy some of these cheap televisions, and you wonder, gee, how can they be so cheap? Well, you know they're going to be doing data mining on the other side. It's the same as, there's no free anything. There's no real cheap anything. But that LG that I bought was nearly a $2,000 television. So I don't have any sympathy that if, you know, they can't do their data aggregation, boo-hoo, I paid you, you know, a nice price for that television. And that was even the Black Friday price. So you're not going to data collect on me. That's at least what the way that I see it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have the Sony soundbar, Sony TV, you know, both very top of the line models, and yeah, they can work without the Internet of Things.
they didn't get any subsidy from advertisers for that. So in our show notes, one of the things that I had mentioned was there's an article I'm going to link to where it talks about certain apps that are helping you with inbox management that are free are also going in and data mining your email and sending that to different advertisers. Many of us here depend on the free app Sparkmail, which doesn't charge anything. And I'm not saying they do that. I sure hope they don't. I think that company has a lot of integrity. I've been very happy with their products. I buy when they make something that has a price associated with it and it's useful, I buy it. But that is something that I hadn't considered before, that some of these free email clients, people like to complain about software having a charge associated with it or a cost associated with it. But oftentimes, if you don't have that, how do you expect the developers to get paid? It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. It's you can't, you know, it's not free. If you want good software, you got to pay for it. I mean, we've all written enough software to know these things. And so I did read the article, and I mean, it's not necessarily selling like your data, like specific to you, your inbox, but it's more of like 50,000 people got emails about Nike or had something about Nike in it. And so they can sell that as kind of an aggregate. It said it was in part used by investors, you know, looking at basically it's a way for them to almost do like a Nielsen ratings of email to see like how often are people reading about this or talking about that versus like you want to send an ad to this person in, you know, this suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's more a higher level aggregation of the data, but it's still data that's being mined from you.
You're exactly right. And as a retailer, as a working for a big evil car dealership, the other side of that is, look, as a retailer, there's a lot of stuff now that we spend way too much money on advertising, TV, print, and internet. And it's one of those that everybody in the car business is telling us Facebook is the number one best place to go advertising for, and there's a reason for it. If you want to find the women in your area that are married, they have three kids, they like SUVs, and they're fans of the Cubs, Facebook can tell you these women and make sure that your ad is shown every possible minute on their Facebook accounts.
Wow, that is crazy specific.
Well, the scary thing is that's not an exaggeration. You can drill down into that. You want to find out just how frightening all this stuff is. Sign up to do some advertising on Facebook and drill down on it. You can geolocate. It is ridiculous how specific you can get with that stuff.
I was actually just messing with you. I've advertised this podcast on Facebook just as an experiment to see. And yes, the demographic selection is it's freaky. Of course, there was an article a couple of years ago where Target was able to predict that there was a teenage girl who got pregnant, and they started sending her, you know, coupons for maternity stuff, diaper bags, things like that. Her dad got really upset, you know, went and talked to the local, started escalating it through the corporate chain, starting at the local level, ended up apologizing to Target because she was, in fact, actually pregnant, and they were able to determine that. based off of, well, if you buy these vitamins and you do this and you get this certain, you know, lotion, chances are you're not only pregnant, but you're going to have, you're in the, which trimester you're in. Like, the data mining just off of your purchases alone are pretty crazy, but not really surprising. Like, on the, it's a double-edged sword, right? You want those sort of things that are sort of tailored to that experience, but you also don't want that Minority Report type of, you know, you're walking down the subway and all of a sudden they're catering things just basically as you look at something, which is clearly what we are, what we're headed towards. Speaking of software that that you have to pay for, Fantastical, the people at Flexibits, released a new version of Fantastical this week, and boy, was the internet salty about their switching from a purchase model over to a subscription model, even though they were pretty magnanimous and said every version, if you bought the previous versions of the software, all of the features you had before would still work in the new software with no cost associated with it. But if you wanted the new features, you had to pay either monthly or yearly. And for me, that was a no-brainer. I went ahead and signed up for a year just because I've used that program for years and years and years. Jim, you did that as well, right?
I'm not sure if I did the monthly or the yearly. I think I did the monthly just to kind of check it out and give it a shot. But more than likely, I'll end up signing up for the year. I'm back on my big 15-inch Mac, and I've got my work calendar put in there too now. So using it for that. It's great software, and both of us probably paid for it so long ago that I would expect to have to pay something eventually, you know, for an upgrade as big as this one was. So, you know, I mean, it, again, I sometimes buy apps or games that I think is cool, and I don't even know if I'll use it forever. You know, I might play a game for a week and then I'm done with it, but I feel good about, I mean, it was $3 or $4 or whatever it was. You know, I would rather them charge me money for a game than sell me some, you know, give me some free game that's somehow limited because, you know, then they want me to buy something to be able to play it.
Loot crates and in-app purchases are the devil. Yes, I'm in agreement there.
You know, so, you know, I'd much rather, you know, like I say, pay $4 for a game and just, you know, get everything. No, you know, given I play Pokemon and I see how that goes. It's not one of those things, but it's also, there's a lot of people that play Pokemon completely for free that never buy anything. And, you know, you can do everything, pretty much everything in the game without spending any money at all. Or you can spend a little money and some stuff happens a little faster, but, you know, because you've kind of got more, you're doing some stuff in parallel versus one at a time, but still, it doesn't change the gameplay at all.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a Power Calendar user. It's the stock calendar works just fine for me on iOS and Mac. But if it's good software, you need to pay for it, because these developers, they need to eat too, and they're trying to feed their families. There's zero issues with that. At y'all, I think y'all are big Fantastical users. I'm an OmniFocus user. You know, kind of like we were talking, Brian. You know, I like a little calendar in my task manager, and you like a little task manager in your calendar.
Pretty much. I do like how it takes the task manager and the reminders at the OS level and sort of mixes them in with the calendar so you can get a consolidated view, including the weather and the forecast in as part of the daily calendar thing is also kind of nice, which especially here in the winter when, you know, it's we get rain in the winter. We don't really get snow except on Saturday when we did. But yeah, it for me, it's eminently useful. It's kind of like the AirPods, right? If I had to pay $50 an ear to get my AirPods replaced after 2 or 3 years, I don't really mind it because I use it every single day for hours at a pop. So it's not like I got this and I used them a couple times and I put it in a drawer. If you made me pay that for my Sonys, I would have some serious heartburn on that. I paid $350 for those, or no, $300 for those headphones. And if I had to pay $50 each side to get them fixed, yeah, I'd be kind of annoyed after a year and a half. But if I'm using it every single day for hours at a pop, you know, it doesn't bother me so much.
I also think, you know, just the nature of those, they would wear down a lot faster if you use them as much as I do the AirPods. The AirPods are like this solid material that, you know, like with those padded ears and that kind of stuff. If you use those as much as I used the AirPods, yeah, they'd get torn up if you brought them everywhere you went.
I can't even imagine that, but yeah, Fantastical. It's one of those things that every day I need to know what my schedule looks like, and also my to-dos, and also my reminders, and then of course I will ignore half of them or postpone them indefinitely, but I still do it. Pretty useful thing for me. Let's see, what else do we have to talk about? So, you know, Jim, you're a big listener of Bill Simmons' The Ringer, right? You're a huge listener to that, right?
I did listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, mostly during football season. I'll dabble in it outside of football season. And I've listened to the rewatchables for a couple of different movies, you know, that I was interested in, and, you know, and I'll dabble in some of the other podcasts. So yeah, I mean, during football season, I'll listen to him pretty much weekly. Otherwise, it's just kind of here or there. I'll, you know, find an episode that I want to listen to.
So it was announced last week that Spotify acquired Bill Simmons' The Ringer, much like they did with Gimlet Media a couple of years ago. And it seems like they're going further and further into to podcasts, which kind of makes sense because, again, as we've discussed many times before, they sort of exist at the behest of the music companies, right? They're sort of indebted to the music companies to the point where they could change the terms at any point, make it onerous, and there goes their business model. So they're trying to diversify. I get that, but I don't really see people paying for podcasts when there's so many of them, like an infinite number of podcasts almost for free. As I put in the notes, the only company that I've seen that's done this is a company called Luminary. So if you haven't heard of Luminary, you're not alone, because most people haven't heard of Luminary. They started in last April, and I think their first big get was Russell Brand, I think, had a podcast over there, still does. And they were asking you to pay $8 a month, and you'd get podcasts from like Lena Dunham and Trevor Noah. I remember when they announced this, it's like, this seems crazy. Nobody's going
to
pay for this.
I'd pay you $8 a month not to listen to Lena Dunham.
Or Russell Brand, or Trevor
Noah. Russell Brand, or Trevor, yeah.
I mean, they're fine for free, I guess, but, you know, some of them have had free podcasts before, and you'd listen to them, and they're like, yeah, this is all right, but nowhere near a monthly recurring fee for this. You know, it is worth noting that when Spotify bought Gimlet, they kept all of their podcasts on existing sources. You know, they didn't take them. We predicted they would bring them exclusively in. This is where you have to go. I kind of thought that would be stupid too, because people that like it aren't necessarily inclined to pay. Now, I guess if you're getting an unlimited streaming music service along with your podcast, that's one thing. But do you guys think about, what do you think about this? Is there any scenario that you can think of where you would actually pay for a service? And if not, why not?
I don't think I would pay for a podcast service, because there are so many podcasts out there that you can listen to for free, and you'll always be able to listen to for free, including this one. But the thing that's weird is, the thing that I don't know is that, so like in the case of the Gimlet Media podcast, see, I don't use Spotify to listen to podcasts because it's not near as good a podcast player as the one I use, Outcast. So I don't use it.
Overcast, not Outcast. This isn't Stankonia.
Overcast. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
I have the Andre 3000 filter. Sorry. I could not help but do that, big boy.
So I get you. So if you listen to a Gimlet Media podcast on Spotify, does it still have the ads? Because, you know, all podcasts like that are making big money have these ads embedded, and I know that's where they're making money. You know, that's why the Ringer podcasts are making money, because they've got the ads embedded. But it's not like, if you think of it in terms of like a Netflix. Netflix doesn't license their content. They're not going to let somebody else, you know, go play, you know, any of their shows and then sell ads on it, or, you know, or sell ads in that showing to make money. You know, they basically create the shows, so you pay for the service. Whereas Spotify, it's a weird angle where they almost, you know, they let their content be played other places for free, but they actually have ads on it. So to me, that's the difference here. And that's something that I don't know. I don't know if either one of y'all know this, but if you listen to those podcasts on Spotify, does it still have ads? Because if it did, I'd kind of be pissed.
I think I'm going to go and check that out, because I want to know this.
I don't listen to Bill Simmons' podcasts because it's I love the guy. I've read his articles for years and years and years. And I guess part of it's I don't like his podcast because he's quit writing articles. All he does is podcast anymore. The times I've listened to it, it's been good. My thoughts about it with Spotify buying them is Spotify is trying to become the big name in podcasts. They are trying right now. If you think of podcasts, you think of Apple. Not because Apple sold ads with it, but because Apple Podcasts has been the granddaddy of all RSS feeds for podcasts.
The pod and podcasting is from Apple.
Exactly. If you want to have your podcast found in the most people, you list it with Apple's podcast service. It is what it is. But the ads, I think that the ads are much, much more lucrative than any of the three of us give it credit for. Take, for example, Relay FM. Stephen and Mike both quit their day jobs and are doing, what, 20 to 30 podcasts on the Relay FM network. Both, it's enough to basically raise their families comfortably. You know, shoot, Stephen Tackett just bought that $6,000-$7,000 Mac Pro, you know, which so he's obviously doing something right with all that. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say I know Bill Simmons' main podcast and Joe Rogan Experience are probably what they're probably the two biggest podcasts in the world, two of the biggest in the world. If Spotify was to take the Bill Simmons podcast and everything on the Ringer network and make it Spotify exclusive, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, yes, they would get some, that they would get a good bit of growth, that people would download Spotify just to keep listening to Bill Simmons. But the amount of listeners that that podcast would lose would be far, far greater than any jump that Spotify would get from that. My guess is what Spotify is trying to do is just what Jim said. There will be ads. These will still be free podcasts. But now that Spotify owns the podcast, they own the content, Bill Simmons no longer has to worry about selling ads for all this stuff. He can have Spotify do it for him. He's not making as much money, but Spotify is going to start making that ad money. And the more bigger podcasts they get, they can start keeping a bigger piece of the pie. And whereas they're really not making as much money as they'd like on licensing the music, with podcasts, they can jump in with the middleman. They can sell these ads for a lot of different people and become a major podcasting network, if not the biggest podcasting network in the world, and make their money off of that and make a very comfortable living and company off of that. It's more sustainable than the music rights are.
Users also, too, are used to hearing ads in these shows. So to them, there would be, for that existing audience, there would be no difference. And I think most people are thinking of Spotify as, well, commercial-free music, but that doesn't necessarily translate over to podcasts. So I would tend to agree with you.
For me, the perfect analogy for all of this, Howard Stern, right there. Howard Stern going to, you know, Sirius Radio. Basically, he left the quote unquote free airwaves where there are ads playing, you know, in the background for you, and went behind a paywall. He had the kind of following that made that worthwhile for Sirius XM to do. Like, you know, enough people would follow Howard Stern behind that paywall. You know, they want to listen to Stern. They're going to pay for Sirius XM. And this was years ago, but still. I don't know that Bill Simmons or I don't know that almost any podcast has that kind of following. I mean, it's going to be the very rare kind of podcast that, you know, is going to bring in enough people to, for me, to make enough on a sustainable level of people just paying for the content without ads versus just selling ads for, you know, a much bigger audience to listen to. You know, I just think there are so very few podcasts that will ever fit that bill. I mean, and it's the same thing for Sirius XM. There was Howard Stern and, you know, some would say maybe, you know, ONA, but I don't even know if they had the kind of following, you know, that made that very, very lucrative. I mean, you know, they eventually got themselves fired, but
there's nobody before or since actually that you could say legitimately had the draw that Stern had. I mean, he is an anomaly to the nth degree. So no, I tend to agree with you. It's also worth noting, too, that when I mentioned Luminary, originally, it's my understanding, they were taking other podcasts that were freely available, like Joe Rogan and whatnot, and they were putting it in their service, and they got notified to stop doing that. So basically, which is a weird thing when you think about it. If I started my own subscription video service, I couldn't just go and take somebody else's content that I didn't pay for, shove it in there, sell ads behind it, and get paid for it, or have my subscribers make that a draw for them to come in, like the gall of them doing that. And, you know, to some degree, Stitcher has done that as well, where...
I was going to say, what's the name of that service that does that with podcasts?
Which, I'll be honest, I put us on Stitcher because who cares, but for a lot of those shows, I think Nerdist was one and JRE was probably another. They had to contact them and say, get this off of here, because basically you're sticking ads in other people's content and getting paid for it. Just the... You know, I'm surprised actually they were never sued for something like that, because
there's no wiggle room there.
Yeah,
you're literally sticking ads inside somebody else's content.
Yeah. It's pretty blatant. You know, the same. I couldn't take somebody else's show and stick it on YouTube and monetize it. I mean, well, people do, but they get taken down fairly frequently and pretty quickly for doing something like that. So I don't know. It seems like a weird thing to me. I hate seeing Spotify do this. And I hate seeing this sort of gold rush into podcasting where people are trying to buy up these networks and put them behind paywalls that will be completely arbitrary.
And just to point out, I mean, they didn't just buy the podcast. They bought the whole Ringer network.
Yeah, the whole network, yeah.
There are a whole lot of podcasts on the Ringer that Bill Simmons is not in. He owns the Ringer. He's in a couple of their shows, but there are a whole lot more stuff on the Ringer that doesn't have Bill than does. And also, they bought the whole website, too, which also has a lot of writing and a lot of really good writing on the Ringer website. So, you know, they bought it whole hog. You know, it wasn't just like cherry-picking just the podcast.
Kind of like Gimlet Media in that regard. So, yeah, they got the whole thing. Not where they did something where they just bought, like, Amy Schumer's podcast and then brought that over to Spotify. It was just a single podcast. We're running out of time. There's still some stuff I wanted to get to, but we can save that for next week. We can talk about Apple Watch sales and what that means for the watch going forward, because there were some really interesting things in there. Let's talk about a couple of cool things. Let's see. So I don't know if you guys have started using the new Apple Maps, but it is really neat inside of CarPlay. So since the new modified maps have rolled out to the entire U.S., which they said by the end of 2019, and they got it in right around like the first week of January, it was complete. Maybe even under the wire near New Year's Eve or something like that, where it's technically there. I know the Southeast and Atlanta, where I live, last area to get the updates. But since I've been using it inside of CarPlay just to see what's what, the level of detail is really astounding. Like individual houses, 3D modeled. I can see my entire neighborhood. I can see my actual house. Whereas before, it was just sort of generic and not as detailed. So everywhere that I've been going has been really good. Just for grins and giggles, this morning I went in and changed. I saw some information for a business near my gym that was not correct, so I submitted a correction to let them know that they had it on the wrong side of the building. It was in a shopping center, and they had it near my gym when it's really on the other side. So we'll see how quickly that goes. Something you guys may have been aware of, I know it's been in there for a long time, but I never really paid attention, was the fact that businesses that accept Apple Pay are inside of Apple Maps. So if you do pull up a business inside of Apple Maps and they do take Apple Pay, there will be a notification in there saying, hey, you can use Apple Pay here. Funny thing, I mean, Jim, you've been to the Halal Guys, and I go there every now and again, and one opened near me. And, you know, when I was submitting the correction, I did notice the takes Apple Pay, yes or no thing that you can correct. So if they stop doing it, you could say, you know, they quit. But that's a nice thing, too, if you're wanting to see where you can go without actually having to take your wallet out. Which is a nice thing. So for all of my driving around town, my daily commute, you know, the sort of tasks that I just do when I'm just in the area, not leaving town, I'm going to use Apple Maps for a while and see how it works for me and if it's really better. We will link to the site. There's a guy, Justin O'Bierne. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name, B-I-E-R-N-E, I believe it is, who does these very detailed comparisons on Apple Maps. I think Gruber links to them every now and again. If you've never seen them, it's worthwhile to look at. He does these animated GIFs that compare what it used to be versus what it is now. And the level of detail really is really increased in this version. So it is something kind of cool. I am running the iOS 13.4 beta just because there's some new business with shortcuts that I wanted to play with. And of course, we get this notification last week that somebody picking this thing apart found a reference to a thing called Car Key, where they're making an API where you can actually use your Apple Watch and your phone to lock, unlock, and start a car. Now, for a lot of us that have modern vehicles, this is not really a new thing. You know, I crank my wife's car with a Chevy app, or I'll lock or unlock it the same way. I do mine with the Mercedes the same way, where I can start the car and unlock it. And some of them even have Siri shortcuts that you can use so that you can do these things. So like with my car, I can do a Siri shortcut to crank the car if I want to, or lock it or unlock it, which is kind of nice. But this is actually giving it so that it's like a dedicated key that's in your phone. So, you know, you can loan it out to other people. You can share and give them their own key to the car that's in the wallet for them to be able to use it, which it's kind of weird to me that we get iOS 13 announced last summer. We have all of these features. Not all of those features have shipped yet. We still don't have folder sharing in iCloud, for God's sakes, which, you know, is also in the 13.4 beta, which is why I'm using it. And then they just dropped this in out of nowhere, which will be nice. But I don't know. It seems like something they would have saved for 14, or, you know, some sort of announcement. Hey, you can crank your car with your phone, but it's even neater than the way that you can crank your car with your phone now.
They may also be going through and adding that now, trying to beta test it now, so 14's not so clogged up and they have so much stuff broken. Which, hey, if that's what they're doing, kudos to them. They need to space this stuff out a little more.
Yeah, I think that's been an often criticism of us on the podcast the last couple of years, is why do we just get all the updates at once? Why can't, like, if they have an update for maps, then push it out. And, you know, they are now, you know, or like, we've got a new feature for Apple Music. Well, how about we get it in February? Why do we have to wait till, you know, August, September, you know, to get a beta? And then, you know, if it's ready in February, then, you know, let me have it.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's see. The last things we wanted to cover before we left. Let's see. Oh, the from the Oculus Quest perspective, I just picked up a game called Pistol Whip this week, which has apparently been out for a while. I just now discovered it. It's basically John Wick, the video game, which is really neat. You know, it's sort of polygon rendered. It's not really deep detailed, but you're going through these different scenarios and you're just basically having to shoot and or pistol whip the people that you come across that are trying to kill you. Played it a lot. This weekend was very addicting. I think it was on sale. There was a new level released, but I am really loving the Oculus. Like I spend an inordinate amount of time. It's a good way to get exercise. My wife and I were doing sort of this competitive Beat Saber competition this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. So I racked up these high scores and I was playing Pistol Whip and I got a notification on my watch. Hey, your wife just beat your high score. So then I had to stop what I was doing, go in and beat her high scores repeatedly to the point that I raised the bar so high that, you know, then I could still play my game in peace without worrying that she was going to come back and beat me. I am very competitive. If anyone who's listening wants to challenge me in a fitness competition, I welcome all comers because I normally max out the maximum number of points per day. I stay normally in a fitness competition. But yes, it's I'm very competitive, as it turns out. So
yeah, I'm sure being married to you is a joy.
She's the one person I won't compete against with the fitness thing because of her work schedule. But yeah, well, I mean, I don't rub it in, but it's just like I got to make it. I noticed that she was getting a little too close for comfort to my scores. So then I immediately stop what I'm doing, go in, playing it on the hardest setting, ramp it up till it's safely out of reach. And then she spent the next 2 hours trying to do it, which was nice. I was sitting there on the couch playing on my phone like, oh, I'll get a push notification if she actually beats me, and then I have to go back and do this again. But when you get a perfect score, it's really kind of hard to be beat. So
yeah, then it's just, you know, there needs to be like one of the figure skating judges that judges how well you looked while you were actually swinging the saber around.
Look, I'm not going to lie to you. It's been in the 30s here out in Georgia. Like, it's been really cold, sometimes in the 20s. And after a marathon session of playing this stuff for like an hour, hour and a half, we both walk out onto the deck in the backyard and just stand there and just bask in the coolness. If you're looking to do something that's going to be fit, you'll be a lot more active and healthy by doing this than you will, sort of like the Wii used to be for people doing Wii sports. Very similar. Like, I'm standing there, I've heard the same Panic at the Disco songs 50 times, and now we were sitting in a restaurant the other day, and one of the, I think, High Hopes or one of those came on, and I started instinctively moving my hands like I had the sabers, like I'm bashing blocks, and we both wanted to do that because we have this Pavlovian response now. Then we hear certain songs. It's like, all right, get ready.
Gonna have ha-ha.
Oh, yeah, that and Greatest Show on Earth and Victorious. And I really do like the Panic at the Disco pack for that thing. So it's really cool. Let's see what else happened this week. Real quick, Netflix enabled this disabling of autoplay of previews. Huzzah. I don't know. Within 30 seconds of seeing that notification, I was immediately on the web. Boom, turning it off. Like, you know. I guess Brad said his wife actually liked that feature. Did you guys go and disable that as quickly as you possibly could?
It's annoying to me. I'm very glad they finally did it.
I haven't yet, but now that you reminded me.
Wow, you guys still haven't done it. Man, I'm ahead of the curve on that one. Well, I had to do it. It was the worst.
I thought about it while I was actually like getting a preview the other day. I was like, I need to do that. And then I just haven't done it. But now I'm going to do it right now.
They only make it so you can do it on the web. You can't do it in any of the apps yet. And even once you do it, it's not instantaneous unless you switch profiles. They say do that or sign out and sign back in. So just be prepared that if you do make that change, you do need to do one or both of those things. But for me, it was totally worth it. My smart TV was updated immediately. Like it worked on its own. Only the Apple TV, I think I had to sign out and sign back in before it actually sort of stuck. So that those things would turn off. Sometimes I do like those features. Sometimes I do like the ability. But, I mean, it just should be something you click on if you want to see it. I don't need, especially if stuff's already in my queue. It's like, why are you showing me a preview of something that I've already added to my list? That is just flat out ridiculous. Do you guys have anything to add before we go? I think this should be good. And I think we'll talk about the Apple Watch stuff I wanted to talk about next week.
I think that's it for the big news for me.
Yeah, nothing here other than I am enjoying my first in-home arcade cabinet. The last of the parts came in this weekend, and may get in there and try to finish that tonight.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that, Josh. Tell us what you did.
Well, I've been For those that don't know, there's a wonderful website called BrickSeek.com that is a great inventory checker for Walmart and Target and Lowe's and different places. And a company called Arcade 1UP has made these in-home arcade machines that they're 3/4 size. I'm 6'3", and it comes up to about my chest, so it's not a full-sized arcade machine. It's a little... It's a little smaller. You can't stand and play it. You need to sit down to play it. They retailed at $300. Most of the cabs come with 2 to 5 games in them, depending. Last Christmas before last, I bought the Galaga one for my dad. We grew up and we'd always go play Galaga at this place a little north of where we lived. And I got it for $200 on sale online. It 30 minutes to build. The construction's actually pretty decent. The buttons and joysticks are, they're not going to hold up to a lot of, under 15-year-old use for small children that aren't going to take care of it. I had been eyeing a Street Fighter II cabinet because it's got 6 buttons on it, much more usable for modifications and throwing a Raspberry Pi in there. But I did get the parts for it. There's plenty of guides online to do it, and it was very easy to do. If you've got any kind of mechanical inclinations whatsoever, if you can build your own desktop PC, you can mod one of these no problem. And it's actually really fun. I've still got to get the sound hooked up. The amp came in, and the amp I ordered on Amazon did not have a power supply. I had to wait for it to come in. But so we can't be as fancy as y'all in Atlanta with same-day shipping from Amazon on some of this stuff. But it's really enjoyable for my first arcade cabinet. I can't complain. I'm looking forward to getting a lot of good use out of it.
I did look at one of those 1UP arcade cabinets. There was a Marvel one that they released that had like the 80s Punisher, and they had a few others, and I ran into it. I don't go to Target all that often. I don't normally do a lot of retail shopping, but I was in there with my wife. I saw it. And that thing's heavy. I put that thing up. All that gym work was paying off. I lugged that thing halfway down the store, and I'm like, we're getting this. And she's like, really? Can you find a better price online? And I was like, I don't want it now. But then I ended up like talking myself out of it. I don't like the fact that you have to buy, if you want to use it sort of standing, you have to buy that riser that goes along with it. And oftentimes you got to get the riser. There's only a limited number of places you can find those. At least when I did a cursory search in the store trying to find it, the risers weren't deeply discounted, and they were kind of hard to come by. So
the risers aren't discounted, I guess, because even at retail, they're $40 or $50. You can find them online here and there, but truth be told, you can, it's heavy-ish. I mean, you wouldn't want to put it on a Sterilite container, or anything like that. But you could build a riser on your own, not too much of an issue. It's basically, the risers are nothing more than just an extra 4 pieces of wood that make a stand for it and bring it up some. But really, if you're wanting to play this thing for an extended period of time, who wants to stand playing it the whole time? If you've got some bar stools or something like that, it's a perfect bar stool size device.
Yeah, I may end up doing that. But I saw when you were doing that was a really cool thing, because I've wanted one of those 1UPs for a while, even though they are kind of limited in utility. But at least you're putting the Raspberry Pi in it, so you're no longer limited to just the games that ship with the unit, which make it really worth your while, I think. So
again, if you look at just the wood kit online from these different places, not counting the arcade controls or a monitor to put in it, you're going to pay $150 for the kit. My local Walmart had this unit marked down to $150. If you catch it just right in some more obscure areas of Walmarts of the world, some of them have them down to $75. And $75, even for one like a Pac-Man or a Galaga that doesn't have the buttons, you can get a kit on Amazon that has 16 of the buttons that are good quality buttons, 2 joysticks, and they even have LED lights inside the buttons to light them up. You can get a kit on Amazon for $40. And at that point, you just drill the holes in there. It snaps into the holes. And they each come with USB encoders that you can hook up to a Raspberry Pi, a computer. I think I saw on one of the subreddits, a guy even had a PS3. He went and he was, wow, a big DOA 5 fan. So he just took the USB encoders. He has to use a PS3 controller to get into the game. But the USB encoders work well enough. They're just like a normal control stick. He hooks up to it and it works.
The big problem that I think that I had, one of the reasons I talked myself out of it, my wife is like, where are you going to put this thing? And even though there's only the two of us in the house, and we do have a decent sized house, I have already almost overtaken it with all of my somebody from 1988 time traveled future and got a nice job. And like the kid from Big, basically, like my house is already kind of like that. So I may end up finding some rationale, some corner to stick it in and do it. I don't know if you remember this, Jim, but years ago when we first met, I used to have a defunct Ms. Pac-Man tabletop game that I would lug, like, definitely when I worked at NetDoor, I had it. Because I got it right when I was leaving, I guess when our friend Douglas was graduating college, it was his. He had it in the dorms, I took it, and then it didn't work after I got it, but then I carried it around from every place I lived from 1997 to about, I don't know, 2003, and most of my friends would end up lugging this thing around like the Ark of the Covenant on poles. It was a big tabletop game. It was heavy. It was dead. Oh, I'll fix it one day, and I don't think I ever did. You know, that's when you mentioned Ms. Pac-Man, that just all came flooding back. So, well, anyway, I think that is a neat project, and if we've got nothing else, that should be a show, gentlemen.
I think that's it for me.
Same here.
Everybody stay warm. It's cold outside.
It definitely is. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at I-N-F-I-N LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.